Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast for Live the Promise. Enjoy the conversation. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in. Hope you're having a great day. Well, here's a question for you today. How do you build a life of significance? Think about it. How do you build a life of significance? Well, today my guest is one of my favorites, author and pastor Jeff Mannion. He's going to show us how we can live an extraordinary life one day at a time. And what he has to say, I'm telling you, will surprise you. We'll be talking about his book, Dream Big, Think Small. Before we get him on, we've got a few quick announcements. I'm so excited about our upcoming Northwestern Christian Writers Conference, and I don't want you to be intimidated by it. I mean, some will come with a manuscript ready to show to an editor or an agent. Others will come because they think, is this the next step? Am I supposed to write for publication? If you are somebody who's ready to pitch an idea or someone who's just wondering, is writing for me? I'd love for you to come. The date is Saturday, July 15th. It's one day. It's on the beautiful campus of University Northwestern St. Paul, right across the street here from the station. Liz Curtis Higgs will be our keynote. And if you listen often enough, you hear Liz on the show every single month. She is going to be fantastic. Pastor Mark Allen will take his team and lead us into worship. And then we've got editors, agents, and experts to teach breakout sessions, and even something called a pro advice room. So you can go into the pro advice room, follow the schedule, and meet with someone that you want to meet with, and take some time, get your questions answered. It will be a time of fellowship. It'll be a time of vision casting and just getting a vision for what is possible if you dare to trust God with this particular dream in your heart. If you need more information, check it out. We've got a whole website devoted to it, Northwestern Christian Writers Conference. com. Hope you can join us. It's going to be fantastic. Also, just want to shout out to our friends. Thank you so much for supporting us financially and prayerfully. This is a listener-supported ministry. And because of God's faithfulness and because of your faithfulness, Faith Radio is growing by leaps and bounds. And people are hearing the gospel and being encouraged in their faith every single day. We thank God for you. We thank Him for His faithfulness. And if you're new to the Faith Radio family, if you're tuning in on one of our new signals, 1290 AM in Hartford, 94.1 FM in West Hartford, or maybe 93.1 FM in Waterloo, or 104.7 FM in Madison, or 90.7 FM in the Twin Cities, or even streaming online. If you're new to the family, email me and let me know, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Include your mailing address. I always love to hear from friends and send you some books from our Faith Radio shelf, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Okay. My guest today writes this, commitment to the small things in life. It isn't flashy, and long devotion often goes unnoticed, but faithfulness counts. The small things like saying, I'm sorry, or offering to serve, or being disciplined in saving and giving. It's these small things that produce great marriages, great companies, and great lives. Love this message. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Jeff Mannion is senior teaching pastor of a multi-campus church, Ada Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he's served for over 30 years. He's the author of The Land Between, fantastic book, Satisfied, another great book, and now this new one, Dream Big, Think Small. His great joy is digging deeply into Scripture, passionately teaching the story of the Bible in a clear and relevant way. He enjoys running, cycling, and hiking. He and his wife, Chris, have three adult children and are proud grandparents. Dear Jeff, welcome back to the program.
Susie, I'm so pleased to be with you today.
Well, we always love having you on the show as well, Jeff. And you started out with the scripture because you've been on enough times before. You know, you came armed and ready. Galatians 6:9, and let us not grow weary in doing good, for in due season we'll reap if we do not give up. Speak to that passage, if you would.
Well, one of the challenging things about that passage is that it uses farming metaphor. And I wish the Apostle Paul had used anything other than farming imagery, where he says, you will reap a harvest if you do not give up. And the thing we have to remember is that just so often there's this massive gap, a waiting time between when you put seed in the ground and when it actually bears fruit. You know, we never harvest in the same season in which we plant. And in between, there is this possibility of giving up, just wakening and saying, you know, I just don't want to do this anymore.
I wonder how many of us, you know, will see that in the replay reel in heaven. I'm sure that how many of us quit right before the breakthrough, truly, because we didn't apply this passage. Well, I love that you started the book by addressing the myth of overnight success. So I want you to start out by talking about the cost of thinking that overnight success actually exists.
Yeah, I think that we fall victim to overestimating what can be done in a very little period of time. And at the same time, underestimating, undervaluing the value of a lifetime of faithfulness. And while this has always been a problem, Susie, I think it is accelerated with like the YouTube phenomenon, with the video that goes viral and suddenly someone is catapulted into celebrity because of a moment. But there's a difference, I think, between momentary popularity or being catapulted into popularity and a lifetime of faithfulness. Mm-hmm. And so I've pastored Ada Bible Church for 33 years now. Chris and I, our whole married life has been in the same ministry, and we have experienced significant breakthroughs. But it seems like these breakthroughs are always bracketed by these huge periods of time where you're just chipping away slowly and steadily and gradually. And so huge breakthroughs happen, but they're usually surrounded by lengthy seasons of faithfulness.
And the overnight success idea, even though, as you say, we see it on YouTube, it, you know, usually produces one-hit wonders because, it, you know, someone once said, you know, gifting may open the door, but character keeps it open. I mean, to have a sustainable career or sustainable run in anything requires an undergirding in your character, which does not happen overnight, right?
Yeah, and then we're working with words like discipline, endurance.
Humility.
Humility, habit formation, and all of those are really long-haul characteristics.
Mm. Okay, you say this in your book, and I think it's so great. It's our human nature to celebrate the astounding breakthrough rather than the repetitive, tedious work that always leads to the breakthrough. Is this because we're in such a quick-fix society, or speak to that if you would?
Well, it's also because there's just so many boring parts.
Yeah.
I mean, take for instance the highlight reel, you know, in the sports show when they give you the top 10 plays of the week, you know, and it's always, you know, the Super Bowl coming, you know, it's the fingertip catch in the end zone or the monster slam dunk in a basketball game. What never makes the highlight reel is an athlete shooting free throws in an empty gym where there are no cameras and no one's applauding. Stretching. That never makes the highlight reel.
That's true.
Running laps never makes the highlight reel. Mm. And so what a highlight reel does is it edits out all the boring parts, and yet it's so often the boring parts that make the highlight possible.
Mm, boy, good. And you say faithfulness in the small things is a different kind of heroism. It's marked by tenacious commitment to repeated goodness. And right now, as I'm just reading that, I want to say a shout out to all you husbands who work so hard and you're exhausted when you come home and you kiss your wife and you smile at your kids. That's downright heroic. Jeff, speak to a few others who are just heroic that are not often celebrated.
Well, just to parents. Now, our children, you know, Chris and I have, you know, Sarah, Andrew, and Alex right now is 30, 28, and 26, and we're on the very front edge of the grandparenting days. But, I mean, I remember the grade school days where it was like Groundhog Day. It was like every day. It was like every other day. You know, so ask parents of grade school kids, you know, describe a Monday. And they go, well, we get them up, we get them dressed, we get them fed, we get them off. Oh, wonderful. Now describe a Tuesday. It's kind of go rewind the tape. We get them up, we get them dressed, we get them fed, we get them off. Okay, now describe a Wednesday. And it's like it can turn into every day feels like every other day. Now, with families, with well-balanced families, there are new and interesting things around the edges. But, Susie, at the heart, there's just this, and then we do it again, and then we do it again, and then we do it again. Now, you're flirting with boredom, but also this is what builds something called stability. Mm. And consistency. kids need to grow up in faithful, consistent, stable homes. And in that is just this repetition. And so some of our heroes should be faithful parents who seek God's grace to bring the best of themselves day after day after day after day. You end up living an extraordinary life, but it's not because you do something extraordinary. It's just because you do something good and ordinary, but you do it over and over and over again.
And it's kind of like the wax on, wax off kind of thing, because they may not think it's heroic, but you throw someone into the mix of what they're managing, they would be downright traumatized, but they're doing it every day, so they become instinctive about it. We're going to take our first break here in a few minutes, but I want to talk about the difference between ability and sustainability. The best example I can think of, I'm a cyclist as well, and there was a season where, I'm trying to remember, I was in pretty good shape, but then I'd injured, so I wasn't riding as hard and fast as I normally was, but I went to my old cycle class, and I mean, I have fast twitch muscles, that's how I'm wired for speed. And this guy in the class, who's also, we would always race to see who could get the higher beats per minute kind of a thing, or rotations per minute, I should say. And so the instructor set us off, and she's like, okay, and they all watched to see which one of us could go. And we both got to 221, I think, rotations per minute as far as pedals. Now, that's hauling. But the thing is, he rides...
Okay, wait, just stop right there. I'm impressed. Can I just say
Thank you.
You program over.
Yeah. Oh, okay, all that to say, though, I got off and about lost my last several meals, and I felt sick the rest of the day because I wasn't on the cycle as often as I normally was. That guy was on all the time. He hopped off, bounced out of the room, and off he went. That being said... we both had ability, but he had sustainability. And I think in this day we way too much celebrate ability, but it's the undergirding of that steady application that allows you to do it again and then do it again and then do it again, you know?
Yep. We've been in our ministry for 33 years, and we still enjoy it. We still love people. We still like what we're doing most days. And, there's a challenge, Susie. It's not simply longevity, doing something for a long time. It's doing something for a long time and still having your heart in it.
Oh, boy, that's good.
Everyone would think of teachers who they're still in their teaching position, but they haven't written a fresh lesson plan in 6 years. It's kind of like people in ministry, we have the ability to resign long before we notify our boards. And it's like, you'll still get my body in the office or on the platform, but you haven't had my heart for 3 years, since a disappointing board meeting, since a decision didn't go my way. And so I think the sustainability issue is huge. Not simply how can we keep our bodies showing up, but how can we bring our heart not simply day after day, but year after year. It's a big challenge.
That is fantastic, and I think somebody needed to hear that. I want to repeat what he said. Longevity isn't just hanging in there for a long time. It's hanging in there with your heart in it. Now, I'm speaking to you husbands, you wives, moms and dads, pastors, machine workers, everybody. You think about this. God has a fresh new thing he wants to do in you. So he wants us to practice the art of steady application and to keep our hearts in it. Talking to author Pastor Jeff Mannion, title of his book, Dream Big, Think Small, Live an Extraordinary Life One Day at a Time. 10 copies. I'm so excited. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Don't forget your mailing address, and we'll be back in a minute. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Have a really encouraging hour for you. Talking to author Pastor Jeff Mannion. He's just one of our favorites to have on the show. His new book is titled Dream Big, Think Small, Live an Extraordinary Life One Day at a Time. And before the break, he was talking about the idea of faithfulness in the small things as a different kind of heroism. It's marked by a tenacious commitment to repeated goodness. And another one I got to just say is it's so good. Longevity isn't just hanging in there for a long time. It's hanging in there with your heart in it. You're not phoning it in. You're engaging. You're showing up. So on the flip side, Jeff, you can see how utterly self-serving it would be to chase the big things at the expense of the little things. You're trying to become a hero to strangers while you estrange those God's entrusted to your care. Talk about that dynamic and how costly it is.
Yeah, living for the spotlight can be a dangerous thing. And I just believe, Susie, I just believe that there is something in the heart of God that is warmed and that beats for the faithful person who shows up and brings himself often to the same people and often in the same way. The challenge of that is we grow too easily bored. You know, I tell my younger friends, and we explain to our younger leaders, if everything has to be new and interesting all the time, you'll probably miss out on your greatest opportunity for impact and influence.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it's not that we're in favor of a life of boredom, but there is just something about giving yourself, even when it's not interesting.
Mm.
And if everything has to be interesting, I think we will really lose some great opportunities in life.
We really miss the opportunity to mature as well, don't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. I've said to our congregation, reading the Bible tomorrow probably won't help you. It's usually followed by a gasp, and people stare at me. And I say, because doing anything for a day, it doesn't help you that much. You know, dieting for a day, working out for a day, saving a tiny bit of money out of one paycheck. And it's not just what we do one day. It's what we get in the habit of doing day after day after day and implementing in our lives, you know, kind of whether we feel like it or not. You know that passage in 2 Timothy where Paul writes to the younger pastor and he says, be faithful in season and out of season.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's something about that,
yeah.
Timothy, be faithful when you really, you know, when you feel like it.
And when you don't feel like it.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I'm reading this gripping novel right now, and it's about this hyper-spiritual guy who always wanted to do great things for God, but he would not submit to anybody's authority. So he wanted to go to a third world country, but his own church, elder board, they're like, at least, you know, put yourself with an organization. And he just said, you know, where's the vision in that? And he was just sort of a rogue visionary thinking everybody else was missing it. So he drags his wife and son to Kathmandu, and he completely neglects them by going off into these villages, leaving them all alone to fend for themselves because he's doing the Lord's work. And over time, he just is losing his family. His son is angry. His wife's dying on the vine, and he's clueless. And he keeps saying to himself, they'll be fine because I am, after all, doing God's work. And, Jeff, I'm reading this, and I'm getting so stressed out. And I'm thinking, how often do you suppose this happens under the guise of ministry where it's misguided, where we're – because God's will doesn't contradict himself, you know? And so speak to that, if you would.
Yeah, I think that there can be a – the word I use is ordinary, but there can be a commonness that we miss, a holy redundancy, a day-to-day loving and serving the people that are at our fingertips, right in our life. And Susie, we miss that if we're waiting for the next big thing to come along.
Mm-hmm.
We desire to live extraordinary lives, and I think the mistake we make is that we try to live an extraordinary life by doing an extraordinary thing. I think it'd be a huge mistake because often a person who ends up leaving an extraordinary legacy left an extraordinary legacy because they applied themselves to very ordinary things, but over a considerable period of time.
Indeed.
Do you know the character Tabitha in the book of Acts? She's also called Dorcas.
Yes. Tell us her story.
Dorcas passes away, and it causes a crisis in the early church. I think it's at the end of Acts chapter 9. And so the apostle Peter is called to the place where she's laid out. And when he arrives there, there are widows that are holding the garments that she made for them, the cloaks. And literally, it's like a widow's convention when Peter gets there. There's just all these weeping. And people are saying, you know, widows are saying, she made this for me. She made this for me. She made this for me. And it's like a hero in the early church has passed away. But Susie, what did she actually do? I mean, functionally. Walk past her house and look in the window. She's sewing or working on a loom or whatever contraption, you know, they used back in the day. The way she left a legacy, it's like over her door there hangs this plaque that simply says, and then she did it again. And then she did it again. And then she did it again. And there are all these people weeping at her funeral, all of these widows that she served. But she did something very ordinary. She just did it repeatedly. And through that lived an extraordinary life and was deeply missed and left this phenomenal legacy.
Boy, that's so good. Would you also say that thinking small, that the daily steady application also helps us keep a short leash on the things that matter? I mean, it keeps us from waking up someday wondering, how did I stray so far away from what really matters? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I've long believed that the greatest gift I bring to my congregation isn't my teaching gift. And I do have a strong teaching gift. And the greatest gift I bring to my congregation isn't my leadership gift. The greatest gift I bring to my congregation is a heart that's alive to God. The greatest gift I bring is a walk with Jesus worth having. And so the daily work outside of the leadership meetings and outside of being on the platform, where I simply have to do the daily work of inviting God into my day, seeking God's continued filling, just asking, Susie, asking that hard question, Jeff, today, where's your heart? Where's your heart? And I go, it's at joy, it's at peace, or the other days, it's racing already and it's only 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm anxious, I'm upset, and I don't even know why I'm upset. And inviting God into my day and asking him to refill me day after day after day after day. For years, Susie, I've gone through a gratitude exercise where I simply write down three fresh things that I'm grateful for. And I don't do that because I'm the gold standard of gratitude. I did it because I began to fear growing old as a person that wasn't grateful. And I just went, man, how can I protect my heart against taking all these blessings for granted? And so day after day after day in my journal, just three new things I'm grateful for, three new things I'm grateful for, just to keep my heart right. So that, again, the best thing I bring to the people I serve is a heart that's alive to God, a heart that's continually filled by God, and a heart of gratitude is part of that. It so comes down to daily, ordinary work done again and again.
We've got about a minute and a half before our bottom of the hour break, Jeff, but I'd love for you to say a word, too, that it's so much, as you say, about what drives us. At least I'm kind of deducing that from what you're saying. What drives us? Because I feel like, you know, it's one thing to have these big dreams and to say, give me, Lord. But I feel like when we humble ourselves and say, make me, Lord, there's just no limit to what he wants to do in and through us. He wants to, but we have to be ready for it. And I think the way to get ready for that is make me an instrument of your peace. You know what I mean? Say a word if you would, because I think if we're driving on and looking to the thing that I want to achieve, I'm stumbling over myself, and we only got about 20 seconds left here. Think about this for the other side of the break, if you would, because I know God wants us to dream big, but I think if the end all is achieving that one thing and not, as you say, thinking small and looking at the importance of the daily application, we will hurt a lot of people, and we'll get the self-important view of our dream, and we can't do that. So I'm totally tripping over myself. So when we come back, Jeff's going to untangle the knot that I've so aptly tied. He's going to make some sense of what I just said. We've got a good stack of his great book with us today. Love to get a copy into your hands. If you want in on the drawing, just email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Remember this, I can't send a book to an email address. So I really do need your mailing address, and we'll be back in a minute. Tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to our friend, author, Pastor Jeff Mannion. I love his new book. Fantastic. It's titled Dream Big, Think Small, Living an Extraordinary Life One Day at a Time. And you know what? It's never too late for God to use you. I don't care if you're 10 years old and you're listening or you're 100 years old. And we happen to have 10 copies of this great book. Would love to get your name in the drawing. Just email me, Susie with an S, not a Z. Susie with an S. Susie@myfaithradio.com, and don't forget your mailing address. And I'll take another swing at this question again, Jeff.
Let's try this again.
Okay, let's gonna make it prettier this time. I totally advocate for us as Christ followers to dream big, as you say in your title. But I can see how we can get the cart before the horse when it all becomes about that and not about the process of being prepared to do it. So speak to that process, if you would. The idea that, yes, on one hand, God does want us to get a vision for the next place of promise, but then he wants to get us ready for that place, and it's often in that hidden process.
Yeah, I think with me about the words of King Solomon, where in the Proverbs, early in the Proverbs, you have this statement, above all else, guard your heart, because everything else you do flows out of it. Mm. And so above all else, guard your heart. Now, this is not simply about what we do. This is about the inner recesses of the soul, kind of like the person you are becoming. And Jesus would use similar terminology where he would say, out of the heart, the mouth speaks. Meaning, Susie, when we rush into our day and we have complaining words, we can be assured that we have complaining words because we have a complaining spirit or mm-hmm. complaining heart. Judgmental words because I have a judgmental heart. Angry words because I have an angry heart. And so I think that those of us that are task-oriented, to focus on these are the tasks that need to be done, I think that's part of it. But I think a higher question is, and with what spirit am I supposed to pursue those tasks? And in the scriptures, there's this constant call back to a heart that beats with God's heart, a heart that beats with the heart of Christ. And it's not simply about the what, but it's about the how. And you and I, Susan, we've been ministry long enough and serving long enough to see individuals with massive talent, massive dreams, massive ambition, and yet there is a wake of broken relationships in the background mm-hmm. because the heart didn't get managed well. Mm-hmm. And it was great ambition that was driven by some deep need to succeed or arrogance or something lower. And we plowed ahead believing I've got to accomplish this great thing. And the heart was wrong. And the devastation is just massive when the heart is wrong.
And you did that so well. That's exactly why I wanted you to unpack that. I often say that, you know, he makes us wait because he's making us ready. And I believe God wants mm-hmm. to just extract from our character the very things the devil would use against us if we got somewhere sooner than we should. And I feel like it's in the daily wax on, wax off, and the daily grind is where those things are refined in us, wouldn't you say?
Oh, well, part of our journey at Ada Bible Church outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan, Chris and I, we started this church when we were 21. We married in June, 21 mm. years old. Mm. 2 months later, this little church, it was like a failed church plant. A church planter had resigned, 25 people trying to decide whether or not to stay open. Mm. And I was between my junior and senior year in college.
Wow.
And they asked me to come in. They asked me to come in and begin to preach. And so over a course of time, it became evident that we were supposed to stay and, you know, pastor this church. Susie, we were at Ada Bible Church. I mean, today it's a multi-campus church serving thousands of people in our region. It took us 7 years to get up to 100 people consistently.
Wow. Wow.
Well, actually grew up to 100 over the next 2 or 3 years. The record attendance on the attendance board that used to hang beside the pulpit, you know, that kept moving up. And then we went through 3 failed starts, false starts in a building program. We said, oh, we'll build next year, and it didn't happen. We'll build next year, and it didn't happen. We'll build next year, and it didn't happen. And during that time, we dropped down to 50. And then finally got out of that building. It was a house structure we were meeting in. And then finally got back up to 100 again. 7 years. We're basically talking our entire 20s, growing a congregation to, you know, 100 people. And so as I look back now, I go, okay, what was that all about? I mean, from trying to figure out what God was up to during that season of time. And so much of the Lord's work is in our lives is mysterious and hard to decode and fathom. But Susie, I'm telling you, if at age 23 or 24, if we had succeeded in that building program and we had grown from 200 people to 300 people to 600 people in my mid-20s, oh, I'm telling you, I would have become intolerably arrogant. It would have been nasty for everybody concerned. Mm. And I know that there are very young servants that have a humble heart that can take on a massive amount of success at an early age. And I guarantee you, I was not one of them. I know this with certainty. It would have been our undoing. And so I think, Susie, I was in character school for 7 years. And then finally, when the church did grow by hundreds in a very short period of time, I think my heart and my humility was in a much better position to respond to that growth. And I think earlier it would have been devastating.
It seems that is so good, Jeff. And I think that what you're saying about yourself is true for most of us. And it seems that in those character training times, you know, it's like God purges those things from us. And so when it is time to entrust success to us, we're not tempted by those things like we would be when we're young, ambitious, and we really don't understand the school of hard knocks, you know?
At least it puts us in a better position. Not that all those temptations evaporate.
Right.
But often if the heart responds to God in a positive way during a significant season of waiting, which is one of the hardest things we'll ever do, is wait for God to move. I think it softens us. I think there's a walk with Jesus that can come out of that that is hard to grow in any other way.
Boy, so good. Well, in the one chapter where you talked about faithfulness isn't flashy, it's the dynamic of ant power, which hinges on repetition. You ask the reader, what activity or discipline can they devote themselves to day after day? And I got to tell you, I worked in fitness for a lot of years, and this is how we always advise people, incorporate one discipline at a time, just one, and make it your own, and own it so it's part of your inner workings before you attempt another one, because people go too fast, too hard, too soon, and they drop off. So what would that look like?
New Year's resolutions.
Yes.
New Year's resolutions. I'm going to improve my marriage. We're going to get out of credit card debt. I'm going to lose 67 pounds before my 20th class reunion next Thursday. None of them happen, you know, because we set them way too big and too many at once rather than chipping away at one thing and showing up day after day.
So what advice would you have for that person who, whatever sphere of influence God has them in, even if they're not thrilled about their sphere of influence, what's a daily discipline that will only move them forward towards the things God has for them?
Oh, my. I mean, these can be relational, these can be financial, these can be spiritual, and these can be emotional. And so there's so many from which to choose. But let me just throw out a few that would be good, and it at least might get us thinking about what some of the possibilities are. There are like 1,189 chapters in the Bible. It seems overwhelming. But someone, Susie, that devoted themselves to reading a chapter a day. Now, you can read a chapter of the Bible even when you have a cold. Even when you have a trip and you're waiting at the gate at an airport, or even when you have guests in town, you can manage to read a chapter. That person would read through the Bible about every 3 years, cover to cover. If a 30-year-old man or woman decided to embrace that, as they're turning 40, they would have read through the Bible about three times. And there's something that can grow, at least in knowledge of the scriptures and knowledge of the word, just because of the consistency in coming back to it and coming back to it and coming back to it. On a financial level, I encourage our people, save money, at least some out of every paycheck. Give money away out of every paycheck. Do not place your hopes on the financial move, the deal that's going to radically change your financial world. People who end up being healthy financially usually set in place a discipline of saving, usually people, which also affects our spending. People who end up being generous over time, it's often because they gave paycheck after paycheck after paycheck. They carved an amount out and said, this doesn't belong to us. This is totally at God's disposal, and they made that amount of their paycheck sacred. I'm telling you, you do that for years, and then those years add into decades. You can give away a mountain of money over time, even if you have a middle income.
And what that does to your heart, to your perspective, where your treasure is, there your heart is. And don't you think the daily disciplines speak to core beliefs? I mean, if you really believe that's true, that somehow, some way, you're going to engage on a deeper level, when you engage your faith with your finances, you're going to experience something of God as your provider that others will not. If you believe that in your core, you will do it time after time. If you don't believe that, you will hold out for the next big deal, and you assume you'll be generous when the big deal comes, but you won't if you're not now. So this really does go back to core beliefs about the daily application, right?
It's a daily faith. It's a daily faith because fear of tomorrow paralyzes generosity today. You know, I go, once something is true about giving, once we give money away, it's not ours anymore. It's not ours to spend on a weekend getaway. It's not ours to spend on an automotive repair. It's not ours to spend on a home remodel. It's not ours to put in, you know, retirement fund. And so literally is a faith move that says, gracious God, I desire to make your kingdom a priority in my life, and I trust you that I will have enough. And here's a bigger one. I trust you that I will be enough once I let this money go. And so I think the activity of disciplined giving, not just spontaneous giving where you see something and you write a check, but this bedrock foundation of disciplined, systematic giving, I think it helps to train the heart.
Boy, you know, my dear husband, he's just one of the hardest working men I know. He's just gentle and gentle giant of a guy. But he would tell you maybe the self-care with fitness and diet probably isn't his area of strength.
Wow,
And I just, that's when I told him years ago, I said, just start with one discipline. I said, drink 10 glasses of water a day. In 1 month, he lost 10 pounds from doing nothing else but upping his water intake. I'm going to read a few of your suggestions from your book. For somebody listening today, grab one of these and apply yourself and see what happens over time. Every day, sincerely thank someone at work for what they do. That doesn't cost you anything. Walk or jog 3 days a week. Pray daily for your children or grandchildren. Begin a consistent savings program by setting aside money out of every paycheck. And Jeff said this too. Faithfully give a certain amount away from every single paycheck. Read a chapter of the Bible each day. Every evening, enjoy a book for at least 30 minutes instead of watching TV. I mean, those over time create a momentum in your life that you otherwise wouldn't have, don't they?
See, that's the problem. They're game changers over time. But you look at the daily activity, and the daily activity just isn't that flashy. I mean, the woman who gets up from her desk and during her lunchtime walks around the huge corporate parking lot, you know, and walks for 20 minutes and then returns to work. You step on the scales the next day and it hasn't moved. You know, I mean, your fitness has not been transformed. But you do that months, month after month after month. The difference, I mean, you've walked hundreds of miles, you know, three years later. And so one of the challenges, I think, and reading through the Bible, Susie, there are days where I'm reading a chapter and the chapter begins on the left-hand side of the page and the chapter ends on the right-hand side of the page. I haven't even moved the bookmark. You know, the bookmark is in the exact same space. And so it is a faith. This is a good discipline. It's character building over time. It's retraining the channels of my heart over time. But from day to day, it just doesn't look like a big deal. Mm. It's only when measured over years.
You really do.
Massive.
You have to be a visionary to be able to do that. I mean, I remember at one of our writers' conferences that I attended, the keynote said that somebody came up to him and said, "What's the best writer's advice?" And he said, "Put your butt in your chair and start writing." And
oh,
I mean, truly, that's, you sit down and you write. And I think that would be the same for just about anything that you want to master. It's the art, again, of steady application. When we come back, Jeff, I would love for you to answer this question. What are some of the disciplines that you incorporated years ago that are paying you dividends now, that are bearing the most fruit for you now, that you will not give up no matter what? Talking to author Pastor Jeff Mannion, title of his book, Dream Big, Think Small. Would you believe it? There's some little ants on the cover of his book. He'll explain why that is, because there's something to be said about ant power. We've got 10 copies of Jeff's book. Love to get you in on the drawing. Email me, Susie with an S, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Don't forget your mailing address. We'll be back in a minute. He takes that little seed and he multiplies it above and beyond our wildest dreams. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Loving this conversation with author Pastor Jeff Mannion, really talking about the art of steady application. Title of his book, Dream Big, Think Small, Living an Extraordinary Life One Day at a Time. Jeff, before the break, I asked you to think about the answer to this question, but what disciplines did you incorporate early on that are paying back in huge dividends? I mean, they're bearing fruit in your life to a degree that you're saying nobody has to make a case for these. The proof is in the pudding in my life, and I'm going to continue on with these. What would you say?
Well, the most obvious one is discipline study time. I preach the majority of weekends a year at the congregation of Ada Bible Church. And, Susie, the demands of the church, I could be answering email much of the morning. I could be in this appointment or this meeting. And years ago, I set aside afternoons for appointments and email and the mornings to sit, to study, to soak, to hear a word from God so that I would have something to say when I stand up on the weekend. Oh, the discipline of opening my hands and opening my heart every week and saying, Lord, what do you want to say to your kids this weekend? Just please, you know, help me write something that would represent your heart to them. I am so grateful that I've set aside this disciplined, uninterrupted study time day after day, week after week, over 3 decades now. That was huge.
Boy, that's fun. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
No, I was going to say, keep going. I'd love to hear more.
Well, another discipline is radically different because it doesn't have to do with production. It has to do with non-production. It's kind of the opposite. I preach 3 weekend services, Saturday night, 2 Sunday mornings.
Wow.
Sunday, the Lord's Day, is not my day of rest. 2 major communications and more human interaction than should be legally allowed. Just people overload.
Exactly.
And so it's just a draining day. And so years ago, Chris and I started practicing Friday as our down day, our Sabbath. We practice on Friday because I work weekends. And so the luxury, and this actually works out about half the time, but the luxury of awakening on a Friday morning and saying, today, there's nothing we have to do and there's no place we have to go. We get up late. Sometimes I make breakfast. Sometimes I go out to breakfast. We go for long walks. We love the old historic areas of Grand Rapids. We walk around our city. We might stop at a coffee shop, sit, read, journal. And Susie, it's a day devoted not to getting stuff done. The purpose of the purpose of the day is not to get stuff done.
Mm.
And looking back, I think one of the reasons that I'm able to shepherd this congregation with passion after 33 years is that we devoted ourselves to taking a day off, to taking a Sabbath day. I think that was huge for us.
Boy, that's significant. A quote I often reference is a Calvin Miller quote. He says, Lord, help me to remember I can make more bricks in 6 days than I can in 7. And
Wow. Boy,
but again, that's a small thing. Nobody's singing your praises to take some time to rest and to be with your wife.
Yep.
But I'm telling you what, when I read stories of pastors who hit the wall or even have a moral failing and they'll start to recount their history, it's that they stopped studying, stopped sitting with the Lord, and stopped resting their bodies or, you know, just giving themselves physical rest and stopped nurturing their families. I mean, those are core, shore up your life kind of things.
Sometimes we throw ourselves into ministry with no pacing. And I've run about a dozen marathons, and I know, do not go out too fast. I can keep my legs moving for a long time, but not at a sprint speed. And so I think that people just charge into ministry, and the work is good, and they see the Lord's hand on what they're doing. And yet it's possible, Susie, to reach a point where you just go, I'm taking care of everybody. Who's going to take care of me? And there's this little voice that goes, I will. And the heart wanders into some devastating relationship that it doesn't belong in. And often it was because we got so tired, we stopped caring. And if someone said, don't you realize how this is going to devastate, you know, the people around you, often our honest response is, I don't care, because we're so at the end of ourselves. And so I just caution. It's not just pastors. We're talking emergency personnel. You know, they serve in an emergency room or in disaster relief or, you know, superintendents in education who are just always go. I say be careful of getting to that point where you're so exhausted that you're beyond caring. That's just a dangerous place to be.
Indeed. And, you know, that, again, goes across the board to anybody, because I think when you start to feel like the need dictates the call, all the steady application stuff we're talking about will go by the wayside again and again and again. And you've got to somehow live in the tension of what's yours to do and maybe what belongs to other people. But I think you rarely will find somebody who's constantly driven by the next need in front of them that also has a nice rhythm, healthy, balanced pace in their life.
You know, one of the most comforting prayers in the Bible is toward the end of Jesus' ministry, where he prays to God the Father, I have finished the work you have given me to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like not every blind person was seeing. Not every demon-possessed person was delivered. Not every paralyzed person was walking. But Jesus was able to pray, I did the work you gave me to do. And I just find it incredibly comforting in realizing there will never be enough time to fix the world. There's always enough time to do what God is calling me to do.
I want you to hear that again, friend, what Jeff just said. There'll be, say that one more time. You'll do it better than I.
There will never be enough time to fix the world. There is always enough time to do what God is actually calling me to do.
And what's so amazing about God's call, his yoke, in the burden, you know, that we carry a portion of his burden, that it does involve hard work, boring days, and walks with your wife down a historical district and coffee at a coffee shop. You're not saving the world, but you're investing in your bride. I mean, that's just, but Jesus lived that kind of life too. I mean, he walked with his friends and then he ministered to the needy. I just think it's so amazing if we could capture that kind of rhythm and pace that he established, you know?
You know what I did? You know what I did a couple of years ago? I started reading the Gospels to find the boring parts. because it seems like Jesus just bounces from one extraordinary miracle to the next. And so this is what I started doing, Susie. I began asking the question, and what was Jesus doing before the miracle? And what was Jesus doing before the miracle? The story where four guys carried their paralyzed friend to the house, and they can't get inside because of the crowd, so they go up on the roof, hack a hole in the roof, and lower their friend down. Jesus is in the house teaching, which is ordinary, and which is common. Before Peter rows out into the Sea of Galilee and catches the miraculous number of fish, Jesus is sitting in the boat teaching, and Peter is providing the pulpit, the boat from which Jesus is teaching as the boat faces shore. And it's the extraordinary that comes out of the ordinary. The transfiguration, where Jesus appears to three of the disciples in all of his glory, comes out of Jesus saying, let's go away and let's pray. It's just a time where he's away in private praying. And so there, I think, is one of the challenges. Am I willing to say I will commit myself to the ordinary and allow God to work the extraordinary?
Boy, Jeff, you
in
could,
the midst of the ordinary.
This might be your next book. I'm thinking of other guys in the scripture, you know, Moses and Joseph, other guys who were faithfully stewarding not the best circumstances, but out of the ordinary then came the extraordinary, from the prison to the palace, you know. Boy, there's so much more we could talk about. The time has flown by. I pray you'll come back and pick up the conversation where we left off here. As we get ready to wrap, I want to read this last excerpt from your book and have you pray if it's okay. You write this, your work matters. Your life matters. I encourage you to build an extraordinary life one day at a time. I pray that our gracious Lord will deliver you from the quest for a quick fix and that you'll taste the joy and freedom that come from a life of consistent faithfulness. Big dreams must be anchored in small, life-giving habits. This is why I challenge you to dream big, but to think small. I'm wondering, Jeff, if you'd pray for that person today for whom this is just a brand new thought. Would you pray for them?
Yes, and gracious God, we do ask that you would intervene in our lives, that you would meet us with your grace day after day after day. I pray right now for the discouraged and the defeated and for those who are losing heart and in real risk of giving up. Lord, carry us, guide us, allow us to be loved by you, that we might finish the race and finish well. In Jesus' name.
Amen. Jeff, you're such a fantastic example and a great model of the faith. We appreciate you so much. Thanks for the time today.
Oh, Susie, what a delight to be with you today.
I always love our conversations. Title of Jeff's book, again, is Dream Big, Think Small, Living an Extraordinary Life One Day at a Time. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. You can find this whole program at our website, myfaithradio.com, on the Live the Promise show page. You'll also see the scriptures referenced, the music featured, and a link to our guest materials. Just a reminder, we love to hear from you. If you were strengthened or challenged by a program you heard, let us know. You can email me through the Live the Promise page with a question, a comment, or even a suggestion for a future show topic. We do pray for you by name on a weekly basis and love hearing how God uses Faith Radio in your daily life. Don't go away. We've got more of Live the Promise up next, Hour 2. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Live the Promise. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend. Help grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and then never miss a show.